All right, let's try that again. Good morning, Chavra. Let us begin by thanking all of our sponsors for this morning share, to thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Adar Aleph, Mrs. Selma Wolf, for dedicating all the shiurim and drushos this month with immense gratitude. With immense gratitude to Hashem for the refuos, in the merit of refuos shlema for all of those in need, in the schus of our brave soldiers, and in the merit of Hashem in the schus of the return of our hostages, the Schwartzbaum family, in memory of Aaron Schwartzbaum, Aaron Yosef Ben Meir Zichron Livracha, the Ziv Levine and Berman families, in memory of Bill Ziv Zev Shmuel Ben Yisrael Zichron Livracha. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, all of the neshamos will have an aliyah, and the families in the Chumrah. So with that, let us begin. Actually, there's no picture by YouTube. I don't know. It's OBS is working in the... Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's going. Clicked on. Sorry. All right, Rabbosi, let's begin. So today's daf is Kuf Hey 105. We are picking up in Meres Hashem on Kuf Tal Amud Beis 104. Be at the two dots, smack in the middle of the page. So the Mishnah said as follows. Mark quotes the Mishnah, Nasan Olas Akeres. Remember again, the Mishnah said that Halacha L'maisa, remember, Mishnah talking about the idea that if you steal from someone, swear falsely, in order to go ahead and do tshuva, you're obligated in three things. Keren, Chomish, Asham. And Halacha L'maisa, you also have to go ahead and find the victim and return to him the money wherever he may be. This mitzvah of Hashava. So if you remember again, the Mishnah explained that Halacha L'maisa, if you returned the Keren, but didn't return the Chomish, then halacha l'maisa, you are not obligated to pursue the victim. In other words, the obligation of hashava, of running after the victim and returning the object to the victim, is a din in keren, not a din in chomesh. So the Gemara says, Amo chumsh mamona. So the Gemara says, you see from here, that ultimately, again, chomesh itself is mamon. Chomesh is a monetary obligation, as opposed to, let's say, a knas, or let's say, just simply a mitzvah. In other words, a little bit different than this. In other words, we'll say, what is chomesh? What is Chomesh? Is Chomesh a piece of financial restitution? Or halacha l'maisa, is Chomesh just a mitzvah? You know, you now have to pay Chomesh. So the Gemara says, you see from the discussion of the Mishnah that Chomesh is not simply a mitzvah, but rather, again, Chomesh is mammon. Rashi says, the fact that the Mishnah has to say that you don't have to track down the victim in order to pay Chomesh tells us that what? Without the Mishnah statement, I would have assumed whatever the din for Keren is the same din for Chomesh. What does that tell you? Ultimately, again, that Chomesh is mamon. Chomesh is actual money, a financial obligation. So the Gemara says, "V'im ma'is misham le'yorshin." I'm saying now because it's mamon, therefore what? Therefore halacha l'maisa, if the thief dies, then ultimately his heirs, his children, are obligated to go ahead and make restitution. Utnanami, we'll say, similarly again, we learned that if ultimately, again, the thief pays back the Karen, and then he swore, that's what? That he paid back the Chomesh. But in fact, he didn't pay back the Chomesh. Hare Mosef Chomesh al Chomesh. What do you see? You're obligated to pay a fifth on the fifth. So in other words, we saw that case, that the Chomesh essentially then becomes the Karen. Alma chum shalamonahu. Therefore, the Gemara says, you see from here, that ultimately, again, Chomesh is mammon. So we'll say all of this pointing in the same direction, that Chomesh is part of the financial restitution. It's not simply a nice mitzvah that you have to go ahead and fulfill. The Tanya, okay, right, so that supports this. We'll say, if Reuven steals from Shimon, and he swore that he did not steal umes, and now Reuven died, Yarshin Mishalman Karen v'chomesh upturim mina asham. Ultimately, Reuven the thief. So Reuven's heirs pay back Karen, pay back chomesh, and are potter from asham. The Gemara says, one second. The Yarshin b'nei shlumi chumsha davon havel. Now it's interesting that the inheritors of the thief, right? So the children of Reuven the thief are obligated to go ahead and pay chomesh. So the Gemara says, or minu, is that true? Adayin ani omer. When do we say that halacha l'maisa, the heir, right, the yoresh of a thief, doesn't have to be chomesh for the theft of his father? We'll say that's at a time, ultimately, again, where what? Where neither the son nor the father, so neither the heir nor the thief himself, took a shavua. took a shvua. However, again, the Gemara says, Huvelo Aviv, Aviv Lahu, what if he took a shvua, but ultimately, again, not his father? Aviv Velohu, or his father took a shvua, but not him. Now, we'll say, by the way, these cases of halacha lemaisa of a son going in and taking a shvua, we're gonna clarify these cases a little bit more. This would be, let's say, in a situation where the son swears that he doesn't have any stolen object of his father, right? That his father stole. That would be a case, ultimately, again, of where the son was going in and taking a shvua. Huva lo aviv, aviv lo hu. Sigmar says, huva aviv minayim. So ultimately, again, where do we know about the case that halacha lemaisa of where both he and his father, right? He and his father took a shvua, and there would be an allegation of chomesh. Tamulomar asher gazal asher ashak vohulo gazal vohulo ashak. So we'll say the idea over here is the Torah indicates to us that the only time that there is a chomesh liability is for the person who actually stole. But if halacha lemaisa, the son, whether he's taking a shvua or not taking a shvua, so lemaisa again, because the son himself never engaged in the act of theft, therefore, halacha lemaisa, there would be no chomesh liability. All right, Amar Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman says, "Well, say, so which one is it? So you just told me before about the son being obligated to pay back the chomesh, and I admit that the son is never obligated to pay back the chomesh." Rav says, "You hear the contradiction." So you told me before that halacha lemaisa, if the father dies, the son is obligated to pay back keren. Son is obligated to pay back chomesh. The only thing the son is exempted from is asham. Now you just told me that a son is effectively never obligated in chomesh. So what's going on? Very simple resolution. Rav Nachman, Lokasha, Kansha Hoda, Kansha Lahoda. So I will say this is interesting. A very simple distinction. One is talking about a case. Remember, I will say, when is Chomesh incurred? When is Chomesh incurred? Chomesh is incurred when you swear falsely and then admit that you swore falsely. So therefore, I will say, everything depends on the father. If the father admitted his liability before he died, then that generated a Chomesh liability. When it generated a Chomesh liability, and now he dies, the son is obligated to pay back his father's Chomesh. As opposed to, father swore falsely, died, never admitted, then it turns out that the father had stolen. In that case, the son is obligated to go out and pay back Keren, but not obligated to pay back Chomesh. In other words, they're both saying, essentially what the Gemara is saying is like this. In order for the son to be liable to pay back Chomesh, the Chomesh liability must have been generated by the father before his death, which means he had to have admitted that he lied under oath, he swore falsely, that would generate Chomesh liability, son could inherit that liability. But if father never admitted that he lied, then under those circumstances, it would not generate Chomesh liability. All right, take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Kan Shehoda, Aviv Bechayiv Achar Shenishba. So because the case where the son would be obligated to pay back the Chomesh would be where the father went ahead and admitted during his lifetime that he went ahead and he lied. So again, if the father admitted that he owed Chomesh, then ultimately again the child would be obligated to repay that Chomesh. Okay, good. So Gemara says, Ila Hoda. Now, whoa. If we're talking about a case where they both say the father stole, right, swore that he did not steal. And then we're both say what? Never admitted that he lied, and then he died. So we'll say under those circumstances, halacha lemaisa, there shouldn't even be a liability for keren. Right? We'll say, remember again, liability for a false oath, right? You incur three things. Keren, chomesh, asham. So asham, remember again, you're never going to be chayv asham. Why not? Something. Oh, okay. Sorry, I will say I missed one of the sponsors, Ramel Ram, for joining us from Toronto. The Ili Nishmas, his grandmother Esther Bas Yaakov, for Refuah Shlema for his father Mordechai Ben Esther. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshama will have an Aliyah, and his father Miras Hashem should be zocha to Refuah and Arichos Yamim B'Shanim Ameh Be'Esim Shanim Tovos. Shkach Ramel, I saw Mel on. Mel's here with us. Good. Here with us on Zoom. Okay, excellent. All right, we'll say sorry about that. So the Gemara says as follows. So if we're talking about a case where the father never admitted liability for swearing falsely, then what, Mashi, thank you. Mashi's full service, by the way. Heat, sponsorships, video, incredible. So now remember, if the father never admitted liability, so then again, if he never admitted that he swore falsely, then there should be no liability for Karen either. Right? They both say, in other words, how is there Karen liability if the father never admitted that he swore falsely? And if he did admit that he swore falsely, then not only should there be Karen, but what? There should also be Chomesh. So what's going on over here? To which the Gemara says, V'chite mahachinami v'lo mishalim. So maybe you'll say, you're right. With this is talking about, okay, if the father didn't admit, not only is he not liable to Chomesh, he's also not liable to Karen. Here's the problem. Baha, mikadmahader achomesh, lameimra de Karen mishalim. He will say, but that can't be. From the fact that we're engaging in a discussion about whether or not the son is obligated to pay Chomesh, what does that tell you? What does that tell you? That halacha lemaisa, he's most definitely paying Karen. Va'otanya, furthermore, we learned, va'adayin ani omer, furthermore, again, we also learned, when ultimately, again, does the son have to repay back the principal of that which his father stole? Bizman shenishpo uva aviv. In a case where ultimately both father and son swore, aviv velohu, hu velo aviv. I. What about the father and not him? Him and not the father. Lohu velo aviv. Not him nor his father. Ultimately, again, minayin means, how do we know that the son would still have to pay back Karen? Talmud Lomar, Gzela Va'oshak Aveda Upikadon Yesh Talmud. So we'll say, therefore, the Pasuk says, talks about all these different forms of liability. We'll say, again, remember, these are all different types of items for which if a person stole, right, and swore falsely, he would be liable ultimately to Karen and Chomesh. The Gemara says, we sit, right, all these items, Yesh Talmud. Now we'll say, that phrase, we don't immediately know what it means. We're going to circle back to that in just a moment. V'yaseh Rav Huna v'ka'amar l'hashmaita. Rav Huna was sitting and giving over this ruling. Amar li Rabba Berei. So Rabba's son said, that phrase, Yesh Talmud. Yesh Talmud ka'amar mar? Does Yesh Talmud means that this is a proper teaching? Oh, Yishtalmu. Or maybe somebody said Yishtalmu. They just said it really quickly, and it sounded like Yesh Talmud. So the Gemara says, Amar li Yesh Talmud ka'amina. No, I meant to say Yesh Talmud, that this is a good derivation. Umeribuya dikrai amri. We ultimately learn out liability from the ribuy in the pasuk. Elamai lohoda. So ultimately, I will say, what's the case of lohoda? Lohoda aviv vahoda bino. Ultimately, I will say, we're talking about a case where the father never admitted, ultimately, again, that he had stolen, that he had swore falsely, but the son admitted that his father had stolen the object. If a son admits that his father stole the object and wants the halacha, then the halacha ultimately is that there's liability for Karen and not liability for Chomesh. So the Gemara says, "I v'nechayiv b'no Chomesh ashvua didei." But I will say, if we're talking about a case over here, that halacha l'maisa, let's say we're talking about a case where the son swore that he had no stolen property with him. Right? He had swore that he had no stolen property with him. So ultimately, why wouldn't the son be liable to Chomesh for his own shvua? To which the Gemara says, Amri b'she'in gezela kayemas. We're talking about a case where the stolen property is no longer extant. It's no longer in existence. E b'she'in gezela kayemas. But if we're talking about a case over here where halacha l'maisa, again, the gzela is not kayum, afilu karen nami lo mishalim, then ultimately, again, he shouldn't pay back Karen either. To which the Gemara says, Lo tzricha. So we'll say again, look at Rashi just a moment. B'she'in gzeila kayemes, delav alei ramya lishalume. Now we'll say, remember again, we're going to see that, we've spoken about this already in passing before, but if father stole property, so obviously if that property is still in existence, then the son is obligated to give it back, right? And we'll say, remember when we saw that, that's because halacha l'maaseh, that's really in order to almost like clear the reputation of the father. If the stolen property, however, is no longer in existence, again, not because, let's say, the son used it up, just because it's no longer in existence, then son is not obligated to make restitution on behalf of his father. So halacha l'maaseh, the Gemara says, we're talking about over here where the gzela is not kayem. Im b'she'in gzela kayemes, afilu karen amilo l'shayim bo azagen. If halacha l'maaseh, the stolen object is no longer in existence, then the son shouldn't be liable to Karen. Forget about Chomesh. Is not liable to principal. To which the Gemara says, Lo tzricha di'ika achrayis. So it says, it's interesting. What's the case over here? The case over here, ultimately, again, is where the father had other real property. Take a look at Rashi. Lo tzricha di'ika achrayis nechosim. Rashi says, V'armina lekamon, tim hiniach avihen achrayis nechosim karkos, chayavin lahachsin mipnei kavod avihen. So Rabbi say again, another halacha. We're going to see this later on, that if a father steals, even if the stolen object is no longer in existence, nevertheless what? Halacha lemaisa, if there's other real property, the children are obligated to pay back the stolen object, or to pay back the value of the stolen object. Why? In order, out of kavod avihen. What does kavod avihen mean? Again, it restores the dignity and the reputation of their father. So the Gemara says, "Ufechi igach reis nechosim, my havi milva alpei." I will say, but even okay. So now let's say we're talking about a case where halacha lemaisa, the stolen object is no longer in existence. The father has other real property, and therefore we say that the children should repay the stolen debt of their father from other real property. At most, it's like a milva alpei. Right, they will say at most at the end of the day it's like a verbal transaction, like a verbal loan. So there's umilva apa in a gavah loan in a yarshin, and ultimately again a verbal loan is not collectible from inheritors, v'lom in alekuchos, and not from purchasers. So we'll say, so therefore again, what would be the case if the children would be liable? Amri top of kuf hey bisha amad bedin. Rabbi says we're talking about a case where before the father died, he was already locked in a legal battle, right? In a legal issue regarding this theft. Ibisha Amad Bidin Afilu Chomesh Naim Mishalim. But again, Rabbi says we're assuming Amad Bidin means that what? Father stole, swore that he didn't steal, right? Then admitted ultimately again that he did steal. So that's Amad Bidin. If that's the case, then we're kind of like going around in circles over here. If that's the case, then there shouldn't just be liability ultimately for Karen, but there should also be liability for Chomesh. Afilu Chomesh Naim Mishalim. Or if we read Rav Yeshua, Lefi She'en Mishalim Chomesh Al Kfiras Shibud Karkos. So Rabbi said, this is interesting, that Halacha L'Maisa, because you don't go ahead and pay Chomesh when negating a claim that is backed up by real property. All right, and therefore there wouldn't be chomesh in that case. Rava Amar Rava Sasach Ma'askinon. What's the case over here? It's actually interesting. Kigon Shahai said the sakya shall aviv mufkedes biyad acherim. Because we're talking about a situation where essentially, again, the father had property, but it was deposited with someone else, so the yarshim themselves never knew about it. If that's the case, Karen Mishayim Daha Isay, you have to pay Karen because the stolen property is in existence. Chomesh lo mishalim, but the son doesn't have to pay chomesh. Why not? Tchi ishtaba bekushta ishtaba dahu lo hava yada. But the son won't pay chomesh. Why? Because at the time that he stole, at the time that he was swearing, he had no knowledge of his father's property. So we'll say, bottom line, what's the takeaway from this? So for our purposes, two major takeaways. Number one, chomesh is mamon. Now I will say now, what I want to point out is something very interesting. Chomesh really sounds like it should fall into the knas family, right? Because remember again, any fixed amount that you have to pay that's not at all rooted in the value of the event that occurred usually is a knas. What the Gemara is saying is, it is a knas, but once incurred, takes on the status of mamon. That's why, again, let's just close the circle over here. That's why the Mishnah says, right, Reuven steals from Shimon, swears that he did not steal, admitted that he did steal. Now we'll say three-prong liability, namely what is he liable in? Karen, Chomesh, Asham. Okay, Reuven dies before having a chance to pay any of that back. What's the halacha? Right, we know off the bat, what don't Yarshim have to do? Asham, right? Why? You can't inherit karbonic liability. Again, if let's say Reuven, I'll just give the qualification there, right? Obviously, if Reuven designated an animal as a shlomen and then he died, so the kids bring it as a shlomen. But what it means is if Reuven himself had karbonic liability for that, karbonic liability is non-transferable, non-inheritable. What do the kids inherit? The kids inherit the obligation for Karen and Chomesh. So in that respect, once it's incurred by the father, then that same liability ultimately is carried on by the children. They have to pay back that Karen and that Chomesh. Good, that's the takeaway. From our Mishnah's perspective, what we learn is once incurred is called Mamon. How do we know that from the Mishnah? Because remember again, the Mishnah is talking about the obligation that if the thief wants to make good after swearing falsely, what does he have to do? Track down the victim. The Mishnah goes out of its way to say he only has to track down to pay the Karen. But if he, for argument's sake, paid the Karen but didn't pay the Chomesh, he doesn't have to track down the victim to pay the Chomesh. The fact that the Mishnah has to say that tells us that what? That Chomesh itself is also considered Mamon. Good. That's the takeaway. Let's go back there. Says the Gemara, Chutz mipachos mishaver pruta bekeren. So we'll say, so remember again. So remember, this is the follow-up case. That if halacha l'maisa, Reuven stole from Shimon, right, swore, admitted that he swore falsely, liable for three things, keren, chomesh, and asham, and then he paid off everything, right, Reuven paid off everything, except for less than a pruta of keren. So we'll say, what's the halacha? For less than a pruta of keren, he doesn't have to go ahead and track down the victim. Right? Because less than a pruta of anything is not going to be halachically significant. Here we go. Amra papa. Lo shana ela shein gzeila kayemes. So we'll say, when we say that the thief doesn't have to track down the victim for less than a pruta of keren, that's only if what? That's only if the stolen object is not extant. Right? If it's not extant. Aval, gzeila kayemes. But Rabbi said, let's say halacha lamaisa again, the stolen object ultimately is kayam, right, is in existence, then tsarech leilech acharov, then you have to go ahead, and track him down. Chashinan shemati yaker. This is interesting. Why? Because we're concerned maybe it will appreciate and become more than a pruta. So Rabbi said, listen to how fascinating this is, right? So let's say for argument's sake, Reuven stole wheat from Shimon. Right, stole wheat from Shimon. So now what happens? He went ahead, same case, right? He swore that he didn't. He admitted that he swore falsely. He's chayv keren chomash asham. He pays back virtually all of the wheat to Reuven. But then to Shimon. But then Shimon, you know, ends up going out of town, right? Or moving to the other side of the world. So now he's got, you know, a couple of stalks of wheat left that are less than a pruta. So according to the Mishnah, okay, obviously Reuven still has to pay it back, but Reuven doesn't have to track down Shimon to the ends of the earth in order to do Hashavah. So Rabbi says, this is wild. So Rabbi comes along and says, when is that obligation that you don't have to give back less than a Shavah Pruta to the, you don't have to track down the victim for less than a Shavah Pruta? That's only if the stolen object is not in existence. But if the stolen object is in existence, you have to track down the victim, even if the value of it is less than a pruta. Why? What are we concerned about? Appreciation. And maybe it will become more than a shav pruta. So therefore, make sure you track him down and return it. So we'll say, pretty wild, right? Ikadamri. Yeah, we'll say, this is great. There's an alternate version of this, which is exactly the opposite. Watch this. Ikadamri. Amra papa. Loshna gzele kayemes. Loshna gzele kayemes. Truth is, we don't care. If it's less than a pruta, Rabbi Osai, we don't care if the stolen object is in existence or not in existence. Eino tzarech leilich acharav. You do not have to track down the thief. Again, Rabbi Osai, I want to be clear. You still have to give it back. But you don't have to track down the thief. Why? L'shem atiyaker lo chayshinon. Watch this, Rabbi Osai. In the second version of Rav Papa essentially says, we do not contemplate the possibility of appreciation. In other words, Rabbi Osai, we look at what the object is. So right now, if Reuven stole from Shimon, and halacha l'maaseh again, swore falsely, incurred liability, gave back most of the object to, or most of the stolen property to Reuven. But let's say now he has still some remaining stolen property. Reuven moves to the other side of the world. Shimon moves to the other side of the world. What Reuven still has left with him is worth less than a pruta. Worth less than a pruta. So again, is Reuven obligated to give it back to Shimon even if it's worth less than a pruta?
Yes.
You're obligated to give back anything. But remember, the mitzvah of hashava, of tracking down the victim, only applies if you have a pruta or more. So if right now Reuven has less than a pruta, he's not obligated to track down Shimon wherever Shimon may be. That he's not obligated to do. So Rabbi will say, and what? And we don't say to ourselves, well, now it's worth less than a pruta, but maybe it'll appreciate. We don't do that. We don't. What we say, like, l'shema tiyaker, the sin is going to become more expensive. We're not choshesh for that. All right, so we'll say, now watch this. We're going to get some really interesting cases over here. I'm a Rabbi. So Rabbi says as follows. Gazel shalosh agudos b'shalosh prutos. So we'll say, watch this. Reuven stole from Shimon three bundles worth three prutos. Okay. Now what happens? V'huzlu. They both say, now what happens? The product depreciates, right? The bundles depreciate. And they both say, now three bundles are only worth two prutos. So what's the halacha? So the Gemara says, if halacha l'maisa, even if Reuven now returned two, he's still obligated to return the third. Now what's unique about this case? Once he returned two, what's the value of that third? What's the value of that third? Less than a pruta. Yet again, the Gemara says he's still obligated to return it. In other words, it's stolen property. Even though it's less than a pruta, he still have to return it. V'tana tuna, towards the Abraisa that supports, says, Gazal chametz v'avar lava pasa. I've seen this case so many times, but it's still exciting every time. So what happens? Reuven stole chametz from Shimon before Pesach. And then what happens? V'avar lava Pesach. Then Pesach comes. Now remember, we're going to both say, this is now chametz sh'avar alava Pesach, which is chametz owned by a Jew over the course of Pesach. What's the value of that chametz? Zero. Right? So now what happens? So Reuven stole chametz from Shimon before Pesach. Now Pesach goes by, and the Gemara says, so Omer hari shachal lefanecha. So we've seen this already, that Reuven can bring the chametz back to Shimon. And what? Say here, I'm a Baal Tshuva. Feels so good to be a Baal Tshuva. Here's your chametz, I'm giving it back to you. So we'll say, remember again, that's the whole discussion of Hezek Sheino Nikar, unrecognizable damage. But in any event, Reuven could go ahead and give back the chametz to Shimon, and we're done. Taima di ise be'enei. Now ultimately, again, that's because the chametz is extant. Ha lesa be'enei, but ultimately, again, if the chametz is not in existence, af agav da hashta lav mamona, kevin de mei kara mamona hu ba'yishlumi. So we'll say, now watch this. This is very exciting. Let's say, right, Reuven goes ahead and steals chametz from Shimon, okay, before Pesach. Pesach goes by. So if the chametz is still in existence, how does Reuven repay the debt? How does he repay the stolen item? If the chametz is still in existence, give back the chametz. Let's say the chametz is not in existence. What's Reuven's obligation? To pay back what? The value of the chametz as it was at the time that it was stolen. Even though what? Even though now presently, what's the value of the chametz? Zero. So we'll say, what do you see from here? You see from here that halacha lemaisa, even though something depreciates, we don't care. Because we'll say this goes back to the thing that we locked in long ago, which is value of theft, right? Value or financial responsibility for theft is locked in when? B'shas gzela. At the time of theft. See, even though, so again, what's unique about chametz is, if Reuven stole the chametz, Pesach passed, and now again, the chametz is still in existence, Reuven has the ability to go ahead and give back that chametz, even though the value is zero. But ultimately, again, if the chametz wasn't in existence, Reuven would be obligated to make financial restitution. So we'll say, so too, the Gemara says, Hachanami. So Rabbi said in the case where you stole three bundles, right? And the bundles were worth three prutos. You gave back two. Rabbi said now you gave back two, and now the value of the bundles depreciated. So now the bundles worth less than a pruta. What's the halacha? Doesn't matter. You're still obligated to go ahead and give it back. Okay, so boy Rava. So we'll say Rava says as follows: Guzel shtei agudos beputa. So we'll say Rava gives out another case. Let's say Reuven stole two bundles, and the two bundles together will say worth a pruta. Two bundles are worth a pruta. Vehechselo achas mehen. So this is an interesting case. So now what happens? Now Reuven gives back to Shimon one of the bundles. So we'll say. So now remember, this is not a depreciation case, right? This is where the value is the same. But what's the difference over here? Reuven gave back one bundle. He's left with another bundle. So there's still another bundle in his possession that's worth less than a pruta. So mahu, what is the halacha? Mi amrinan hashta leka gzela. So we'll say, so ultimately again, do we say that essentially Reuven doesn't really have stolen property with him anymore, right? Why not? Because all he has left with him is what? Is one bundle that is worth less than a pruta. So maybe halacha doesn't recognize that he has stolen property with him anymore. O dilma, ha lo hadir gzela tahavigabe. We'll say, on the other hand, that halacha lemaisa, maybe he hasn't really fulfilled the mitzvah of returning the stolen object. Why? Because he has not yet returned property worth a full pruta. Remember again, all he did is return one bundle, which is worth ultimately again half a pruta. To which the Gemara says, Hader Pashta, he answered, Gzela in Kan, Hashava in Kan. Ultimately, there's no theft and there's no return. The Gemara says, what does that mean? I Gzela in Kan, Hashava Yishkan. So I'll say, if there's no theft, then how could there be a return? Hachakam, this means to say, Afa Pishe Gzela in Kan, Mitzvahs Hashava in Kan. So I'll say, ultimately, again, even though technically speaking, he's not really right. He's not really considered to be in possession of stolen property anymore because it's worth less than a pruta. But lamaisa, he has not yet performed the mitzvah of hashava. Or as I was saying, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of returning a stolen object, you must return property at a minimum value of a pruta. So therefore, again, if Reuven stole two bundles, those bundles together are worth a pruta. He returned one bundle. So again, I will say, so it's this interesting case. So he has returned property, but he has not fulfilled the mitzvah of returning stolen property. Because the mitzvah of returning stolen property is only fulfilled when you return at least a pruta's worth of property. And in this case, all you've done is returned half a pruta's worth of property. So therefore, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Hashava, you would have to return the other bundle as well. Amar Rava. So we'll say some other cases that are like this. Hari Amru, this interesting case. Nazir Shegilach Vashir Shtei Saros, Lo Asav Lo Klum. So we'll say, so remember again, a Nazir at the end of his Nazirite vow has an obligation to shave his head. And now it's true, it's not just only at the end of his Nazirite vow, he becomes Tamei. Okay. But the point over here is when a Nazir has an obligation of Giluach, of shaving his head, he has to shave everything. If Nazir leaves over two hairs, Lo Asav Lo Klum, then it's not a shaving. Right? So I will say, what you see from here is two hairs, in vast, if the presence of two hairs means that his head is not shaved. Okay? His head is not shaved. So I will say, take a look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, Amar Rav Acha L'Ravina Nazir Shegilach. No, I'm sorry, not yet. So by Rava. So Rava said as follows. What about the following case? Gilach Achas V'Nisha Achas Mahu. So I will say, now watch this. Let's say the Nazir shaved his head. He left over two hairs. Okay, so now he's got to remedy this situation. So he's got two hairs left. Let's say he cuts one of them and one of them falls out. So what's the halacha? What's the halacha in this case? Mahu. So we'll say, what's the halacha? And I will say, now what's unique about this case? Now normally if a Nazir would shave his head and leave over two hairs, what would we say? Okay, you have a mitzvah of giluach. I will say, the mitzvah of giluach, the minimum shear for the mitzvah of giluach ultimately is two hairs. So let's say there were two hairs left over. One fell out, right? Or gilach achas, he shaved one, but one fell out. So is that the mitzvah of giluach or not? Mahu. So the Gemara says, what's the halacha? Amar le Rav Acha mi difti l'ravina. Nazir shegilach achas kami baile l'rava. So the Gemara says, what is Rav asking? Is Rav asking, I will say, let's say a Nazir were to shave his head, but he would literally cut one hair at a time. So we'll say, wouldn't everyone agree that at the end of the day, as long as he has no hair, by the time this process is complete, that halacha lemaisa again his head is shaved? So what's the shayla? Amrle, lo tzricha kigon shenashar achas mehen vigilach achas mehen. So we'll say, this is interesting. What's the case? The case is where he had two hairs left, right? He had two hairs left. One of them fell out, and he shaved the last one. What's the halacha in this case? Mi aminan. Hashta mihas halakashir. So we'll say, on one hand, do we say that at the time that he gets to the last hair, there is not a shear of giluach? Well, as we'll say, halachically, in order for something to be considered proper head shaving of a nazir, there's a two hair requirement. Here, he doesn't meet the two hair requirement. Odoma halav giluachu tme kara hashir shte saros. So also, do we say no? That at the end of the day, the sheer giluach is fundamentally missing over here. Why? He left over two hairs. If you leave over two hairs, what's the obligation? What's the obligation? Say, leave over two hairs. That means you did not shave your head. Now, suppose if you didn't shave your head, what's the Nazir's obligation? What's his obligation? Shave his head. What's the minimum sheer of shaving your head? Two hairs. Which means if one falls out and he's left with one, he didn't fulfill the mitzvah of giluach. So we'll say, could very well be that. What does he have to do? This is incredible. What does he have to do? He has to let his hair totally grow back again, and then he could shave it off. We'll say, hear what's happening over here? Just watch the dynamics of the case. It's so fascinating. A nazir shaves his head. He left over two hairs. If you left over two hairs, then halachically, what's your status? Unshaved. In other words, leaving over a full head of hair, I don't know why I'm going like this, but leaving over a full head of hair, right, or leaving over two hairs are the same thing. It's the same thing, which means you haven't shaved your head. So now he left over two hairs, one of them fell out, which now means there's only one hair left to shave. Well, shaving one hair is not the mitzvah of giluach. the minimum mitzvah of giluach is 2 hairs. So maybe we should say, listen, sorry, you can't, at this point, you can't fulfill the mitzvah of giluach. So what do you have to do? Let it all grow back, and then you'll shave it and fulfill the mitzvah of giluach. Incredible. So the Gemara says, Hadar Pashta, he answered, Sar inkan, giluach inkan. He answered, there's no hair in this case, and there's no shaving in this case. Gemara says, I don't understand. Once again, that formulation doesn't make sense. Isar inkan, giluach ishkan. So I understand, if there's no hair, could there be any shaving? Hakim Razin means to say, Afa pisha ser inkan, even though again, let's say you have a case over here where the Nazir has no hair, nevertheless, mitzvahs giluach inkan. Nevertheless, he cannot fulfill the mitzvah of giluach. So let's say, sounds according to the Gemara, what you would have to do in a case like this is pretty well. What you have to do in a case like this is what? Let your hair grow back, and do a proper giluach. Shabbos say, because the technical issue over here is the mitzvah of giluach, of actively shaving your head. Shabbos say, let me say it differently. What you see from here from a nazir is, it's not the mitzvah of shaving is not that you should have no hair. The mitzvah of shaving of a nazir is that the nazir removes his hair. So therefore, again, in a case where he doesn't have the minimum shear of hair to remove, he can't fulfill the mitzvah of giluach. So therefore, again, he shaved his head. He left over 2 hairs. He hasn't fulfilled the mitzvah of giluach. One of those hairs falls out. So now he only has the ability to actively remove 1 hair. That's not the mitzvah of giluach. So what would he have to do? He'd have to wait for his hair to grow back in and go ahead and shave his head properly. Pretty incredible. So Rava says, Hari Amru, what about the following case? Chaviz shenikva v'sasmu ashmarim. Shabbos say, okay, this is actually an interesting case over here. So imagine the following scenario. You have a house. House has two floors. There is a hole in the roof, right? So there's a hole in the roof, right in the ceiling, between floor 1 and floor 2. You're both saying, I remember, what's the halacha? If somebody dies on floor 1, so what's the halacha? Both say, there's tumas ohel, which means tumas may spread throughout the entire home. Normally, if there's a ceiling, right, between floor 1 and floor 2, that could mean that the tuma could be contained to floor 1. If there's a hole in the ceiling between floor 1 and floor 2, then tuma ascends. Now, this is an interesting case. If you have a barrel, let's say you have a barrel, right? An earthenware barrel that plugs the hole in the ceiling between floor 1 and floor 2, then what? That's chotzeitz b'fnei ha-tumah. That's a barrier that keeps the tumah ultimately again on floor 1, and it doesn't ascend to floor 2. Take a look at Rashi. Chavish nikva v'sasman abos. Now in our case over here, you plug the barrel in the hole, but then what happened? Now there's a hole in the barrel. So Rashi will say, if there's a hole in the barrel, then what's the halacha? The tumah once again ascends from floor 1 to floor 2. Only a complete barrel prevents the tumah from ascending. But if halacha l'maisa, the barrel itself has a hole, then the tumah is olo bokas. So Rashi says over here, chavish nikva v'sasmua. She's really looking bar. Chavish nikva v'sasmua shmarim. Hitzidos. We'll say, so now watch this. So if the barrel has a hole, well, what happened? Well, so let's say this is a wine barrel. So the dregs, right? The dregs in the barrel itself plugged the hole. Then what? It works, right? This is shmar hitzilua. Hitzilua also means it saves the second floor from having the tumah ascend. By Rava, agav chatzia mahu. So Rava asks Fani Kasha, what happens if the barrel has a hole and you plug the hole partially? You plug the hole partially. So we'll say, so not totally, but partially. What's the halacha? Amar lei Rav Yemar, the Rav Ashi, lav mishnah seinuhi. Is this not a mishnah? This now we learned, chavish nikva, if you have a barrel that has a hole, visasmu shmarim, and then the dregs filled up the hole, and now again, so the barrel no longer has a hole, hitzilua. Ultimately, again, they saved the second floor from tumah. Pakeh ka bizimura, but lest you plugged up the hole with some vines, ad shimarach. So we'll say vines by themselves won't plug up the hole until like you plaster the area around the vines, right? Sealing it up. Hayu bashtayim, even if there are 2 vines in there, ad shimarach minat stadim ubein zmur lechaverta. Even then, we'll say again, you still have to plug up the open areas between the vines and around the vines. So we'll say time of the marach. The only reason why the vines are helpful is if you plaster the remaining open area. Halo marach lo, but if you didn't plaster, it doesn't work. And both say, now what do you see from here? You see from here that if you have a hole, even if you partially plug up the hole, that doesn't help regarding tumah. It's got to be fully filled in. So Gemara says, V'amai, the Gemara says, amai, v'tehavi ki agav chatzya. Why shouldn't it be, I will say, in other words, we're not getting into this now, but obviously only a hole of a certain size allows the transference of tumah. So really, I don't need to fully plug the hole. What do I just need to do? What do I just need to do? Minimize the hole. Minimize the hole, right? So again, if I have vines or I have other stuff in there, so let's say for argument's sake, the hole in the barrel was exactly the size that allows for the ascension of tumah. So why should I have to plug up the whole hole? All I need to do is what? Plug a part of it. So therefore, in a case where you have vines in there, that should be enough. Why should you have to plaster any other open areas? So what's going on over here? Switch the Gemara, says, v'te'avi. Time with the marach, hello marach, amai, v'te'avi ki agav chatzya, amri hachi hashtahasam kilo marach lokai. Agav chatzya, v'midi dekai kai. Well, there's a big difference. In the case where, let's say, again, you plaster up half of the hole, that filler remains in place. The problem with the vines, I will say, is when you stick vines into the hole of the barrel, if they're not plastered, then what? They don't remain in place. This Gemara says it's a practical issue. Rava says, listen to this, back to chametz. Hari Amru, gazel chametz v'arva lava pesach, omer la hari shachal lefanechas. Well, so you've seen this case many times, right? Reuven steals chametz from Shimon before Pesach. And then what happens? Pesach goes by. Reuven wants to be a Baal Tshuva. The chametz is still in existence. What does Reuven do? He gives back the chametz to Shimon. He says, Shimon, here is your chametz. Rabbi will say, that works. That works. So by Rava. So Rava asks the kasha. I will say, Amud Beis, by Rava, Nishba Alav Mahu. So Rabbi will say, now watch this. What happens if after Pesach, so right, Reuven steals from Shimon before Pesach. After Pesach now, Reuven is confronted with the fact that he stole from Shimon, and Reuven swears that he did not. He swears that he didn't steal, right? Nishpa alav, Rashi says over here, nishpa alav la'achar shenasar, nishpa sheinetz, lov lo gazl mimenu. So we'll say, mahu, what is the status? Right? What is the status? So we'll say, so now remember, what's interesting about this case, technically speaking, Reuven is denying something that is worthless, right? Technically, because why? Because chametz, after, remember, the chametz is in existence. Chametz after Pesach, right? Chametz after Pesach is aser, and therefore not worth anything. So we'll say, mahu, watch this. Kevan di imignav by shlumele mamona. Kevan di imignav by shlumele mamona ka kafrale. Al dilma hashta mihas hamanach va'afra ba'almohu v'lo kafrale mamona. So Rabbi will say, this is a fascinating question. So how do we look at this case? Do we say, on one hand, right, If the chametz, let's say, were to disappear, the chametz were to be stolen from Reuven the thief, then Reuven would be obligated to make monetary restitution to Shimon, right? What would he have to pay back Shimon? What would he have to pay him, right? The value of the chametz ton that was stolen. On the other hand, right now, if Reuven has the chametz in hand, he could pay back Shimon with that chametz, and that chametz is technically valueless. So I will say, essentially, we're asking over here, do we view Reuven as having sworn falsely regarding an item that is a Shavar Pruta or not a Shavar Pruta? On one hand, it's a Shavar Pruta because halacha lemaisa, if the object was stolen, you would be obligated to pay back the value of the item at the time it was stolen. On the other hand, if it's extant, he could just give it back and it's valueless. So do we view Reuven as having denied a valuable item or a valueless item? Such a great kasha. That which was a question according to Rava, ultimately again was obvious according to Rava. Why? We'll say, what's Rava's case? Here we go. Dama Rava, shori ganafta. Listen to this case. Right? Shimon goes over to Reuven. Reuven, you stole my ox. Reuven says, chas v'shalom. How's that? Stole your ox. So Shimon says, okay, mativo eslecha. Shimon says, that's funny because that's my ox and it's in your yard. So right, so tell me exactly what I paint the picture for me, right? Paint the picture for me. Why is my ox in your property if you didn't steal it? So Reuven says, very simple. Shomer chinam ani alav. I'm a shomer chinam, right? In other words, you deposited it with me to go ahead and watch it. So now here's what's interesting. What's interesting about these cases over here is Reuven is admitting that the ox belongs to Shimon, right? He's just claiming that ultimately, again, he is a shomer chinam. Ultimately, I will say now he's going to be chayiv. Rashi says over chayiv, karban shvua So ultimately, we're going to see that Reuven has liability. Now, why does Reuven have liability in this case? Because by claiming that he was a Shomer Chinam, he was covering himself from certain liability, right? Because the Shomer Chinam is Pater on Geneva Va'aveda. So ultimately, again, there's going to be liability for that. Shomer, or let's say, same case. So in this case, Reuven claims Shomer Sachar Ani. I'm a Shomer Sachar. Right? I'm a paid custodian. In that case, there's also going to be liability. It's going to be chayiv v'karban Hashem. Why? Shari pater atzmo mishvura umesa. Because let's remember again, by denying that he stole it and claiming that he's a shomer, he also shielded himself from liability. What type of liability? Right? Ultimately, again, shvura and mesa. If the animal dies or it breaks, right? He gets injured. Shomer sachar is pater. Shoal ani alav. But say all these cases are the same, right? Shem is coming over to Reuven. Reuven, you stole my cow. Reuven's saying, no, I didn't. Shimon says, no, so why is it in your property? To which Reuven is responding, I'm a shoel, I'm a borrower. So we'll say, same thing, chayiv. Once again, Reuven is going to be liable. Why? Because we'll say, once again, by claiming that I'm a shomer chinam, I'm a shomer sachar, I'm a shoel, what Reuven is effectively doing is, while he's not denying that the animal belongs to Shimon, by claiming these things, he's trying to shield himself from liability. Alma, so we'll say, what do you see from here? Afa gav dahavakayim, so we'll say, what you see from here is, we'll say, that even in cases where you swear falsely, even though, again, there's no financial liability. In other words, Rabbi said, because remember, again, let's say, for example, in these cases, Reuven is agreeing that the animal goes back to Shimon, right? So in other words, he's agreeing, he's not depriving Shimon of anything, so effectively, he's not generating financial liability in the oath. Nevertheless, Kevan the imignav mamona kakafar. Since you're about to say in the event that the property, if it was stolen, Reuven would be on the hook for it. Therefore, again, it's considered as if he's denying financial liability. Hashtanami mamona kakafar. So I'll say ultimately again. So to over here. So therefore, it's considered as if he's denying financial liability. So we'll say, let's go full circle. Remember, what was our case? Our case was Reuven stole chametz from Shimon. Now Pesach went by. Right? So now Shimon comes to Reuven, you stole my chametz. Reuven says, I swear I didn't sell your chametz. Then Reuven admits that he stole the chametz. So I'll say, so what's the shayla? So is Reuven liable or not? Because at the end of the day, right, if the chametz were to be stolen from Reuven, Reuven would have to make restitution in the value of the chametz at the time it was stolen. On the other hand, if the chametz is in existence, Reuven has the ability to just give it right back to Shimon. What's the value of that chametz? Zero. So maybe Reuven's not really denying a viable financial claim. So that's our shayla. Do we say, since if the object was stolen, Reuven would be on the hook for the financial value, therefore what? Therefore, this is a case of denying financial liability. So the Gemara proves it, we'll say from here, that you see in these cases of the shomrim, right? Reuven has the animal. Shimon says, Reuven, you stole my animal. And Reuven swears, no, I didn't steal it. I was a shomer chinam, a shomer sachar, this, that. In these cases, right, Reuven just has the ability to give back the animal to Shimon. Right? There's no loss, so to speak, right? It's just a wash. I'm just giving you back. On the other hand, if the animal were to be stolen from Reuven, Reuven would be on the hook for it. So what do you see from here? That essentially the way we assess liability is, even if the item is quote-unquote valueless now, but if it were to be stolen and you would be liable, then denial of that claim is denial of a valid financial claim for which there is liability. To which the Gemara says, good. Hachanami, first wide line, Hachanami af agav da afra ba'amahu. So to again, says in the south side. So to in the chametz case, even though right now that chametz is valueless, kevan di mignav bay shlumilei mamona ma'alya hashtanami mamona kakafalei. So the Rebbe says in the chametz case, even though right now the object itself, when it's in existence, is valueless and you could return that, since if it were to be stolen, you would have to make financial restitution. Therefore, again, denial of the chametz is considered to be denial of a viable financial claim, and therefore there's liability. Yosef Rava the Kamal Hashmaida. So Rava sat, was saying over this ruling. Eisei Rav Amram the Rava. So Rav Amram raised the hashat to Rava the kicheshba. So we'll say the pasuk over here is talking about halacha lemaisa. Or let's say you find an object, right, and you deny that you find it. You deny that you found it, and you swore that you don't have it. So Rabbi says, so then again, that's the halacha of Keren Chomesh Asham. So the Kicheshba, Prat Lamoda Be'ikar. So Rabbi says, what does this come to exclude? This comes to exclude the case of where a person admits that he owes the object to the other party. For example, Ketzad, Shori Ganafta. Right? Shimon comes over to Reuven. Reuven, you stole my axe. Vo Omer Lo Ganafti. And what happens? And Reuven says, no, I never stole it. So I, Shimon says, Mativo Atzlecha. So now what happens? So now Shimon says, okay, if you didn't steal it, then why is my animal with you? So Reuven responds, Ata Mechartali. You sold it to me. Or Ata Nasatli Matana. You gave it to me as a gift. Avicha machroli, your father sold it to me. Avicha naslim matana, or your father gave it to me as a gift. So the Gemara says, Achar parasi ras me'ilav. Or Reuven says to Shimon, you know what? I didn't steal your cow. You know what? Our cows kind of have a thing going on, right? So your cow ran after my cow, right? Ba etzli, right? So I'm sorry, ras me'ilav. Or ultimately, again, it came to me. Or I found it wandering, you know, in the field. And so I took it in. Shabbos say, or Shomer Chinam Ani Alav. Or I'm a Shomer Chinam. Shomer Sachar Ani Alav. Or I'm a Shomer Sachar. Shoel Ani Alav. I'm a Shoel. Vinishba. And Shabbos say, in all of these cases, Reuven swore that this is what happened. And then Vahoda. Then he admitted that he lied. Right? He admitted that he stole it. Shabbos say, watch this. Yachol Yehi Chayiv. You might have thought that Reuven should be Chayiv in this case. It's incredible. No, there's no liability here. Why? Rabbi says, this is incredible. So now, Rav Amram says, in these cases, no liability. Rabbi says, now, why is there no liability in this case? The only time there's liability, Rabbi says, is when you try to deprive someone of something. Rabbi says, in these cases, is Reuven trying to deprive Shimon of anything? Trying to deprive him of anything? No, technically no. Why? Because in all of these cases, Reuven is admitting that who does the animal belong to? Shimon. What is he lying about? He's lying about how the animal got into his possession. Right? So what he's lying, what really happened over here is that Reuven stole it from Shimon. That's what happened. He's lying and he's saying that at the end of the day, I'm a Shomer Sachar, I'm a Shomer Chinam, I'm a Shoel, you sold it to me, you gave it to me as a gift, whatever it is. Salach Lamaisa, again, I will say, but in these cases, he's agreeing that at the end of the day, the property belongs to Shimon. So Rav Amram posits in that case, there's no liability. So the Gemara says, Pratamodu Ve'ikar, Amrale Tidura. So Rav says, Rav says back to Rav Amram, Tidura Rav says is a shtickle insult. Well, actually, it's not a shtickle insult, it's just an insult. Tidura means you lost your mind. Ki tanya hayi deka Amrale Helich, ki ka'amina dekaima ba'agam. This case, Rav says, is where Reuven says to Shimon here, take the object back. Take it back. So in that case, Rav Amram, he's admitting, as you said, just take it back. What I'm talking about is a case where the object is not yet in existence. No, I'm sorry. The object is not with the current thief. The object, let's say, is in the swamp. So it's somewhere else. In that kind of case, ultimately, again, there would be the possibility of depriving. So I will say, so we'll stop over here for today. We'll pick up with this case. So I will say, really, some really fascinating scenarios over here. I will say, Shigayach, we'll stop here, pick up with this case, and halacha l'maaseh tomorrow. Incredible.
Your bi-weekly question.
Yes.
I thought you said that if the thing wasn't extant, that he didn't have to pay it back. That was the case A. In the case B, they said even if it wasn't extant,
which scenario was that?
Wait a little bit ago, when you stole it and then it was used up,
yeah,
he didn't have to pay it back.
No. Whenever you steal, you always have to pay it back. The question just is, you know, what's the value of what you pay back? So if I steal an object from you, and that object exists, I give you back that object.
Right.
Even if the value changed.
Right. I get that.
If I stole from you, and let's say the object is gone, then I'm obligated to pay back the value of the object at the time that I stole it. The only difference is if, let's say, I steal, and then I die. So if the object is still in existence, my kids are obligated to give back that object. If the object is not in existence, they're not obligated to give back anything.
That means that they got away with using it
all? No. They didn't get away with anything. The obligation is not on them. Oh, no. If I die and I'm out of this lower existence and they used it up, then they have to pay it back. But let's say again, it was used up before they died.
Okay.
So then the liability is there.
The thief used it.
Correct.
So the thief got away?
Well, the thief is dead. Technically, yeah. I mean, he didn't get away with it because now he's dead.
He's dead.
But technically.